This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, or the Mid-Morning Shipping Forecast, as it is now known. What has been going on this morning? Well, it's been all expo. That big announcement about vaccination and PCR testing requirements for those 18 and over. We've had a senior vice president from expo on the show taking all of your questions about how that is going to work. We've been having a look at the latest Henley & Partners list of where the rich people of the world like to live. We are on it, and we were on it this morning, finding out more about that. Plus, putting the Dubai non-oil trade numbers into context and finding out what they mean for the wider economy. Speaking to Emirates NBD economist Khatija Haque about those. And Serena Kelly was in the studio putting Tom through his paces as our new shipping correspondent.
Ask Serena.
Right, you ready?
Yep.
Are you about to give
Here
us... Wait. Are you about to give us a shipping forecast?
For all those people scratching their heads going, what on earth are they talking about? I will give you a shipping forecast.
Can you just wait for your intro music?
Sure.
There once was a ship that put to sea. The name of the ship was a Bully of Tea. The winds blew up, her bowed up, down or below. My bully boys blow. She'd not been 2 weeks from shore when down on her a right whale bore. The captain called all hands and swore he'd take the whale in tow.
I like it.
Sea shanty, big on TikTok at the moment, apparently. Off you go.
Sea shanty. And now, here is the shipping forecast. There are warnings of gales in Viking, North Utsa, South Utsa, Forties, Cromarty, German Bight and Humber. The general synopsis. Low, Rockfall 973 moving northwards, losing its identity by same time. New low expected, Marlin, by that time. Low, Hebrides 994, moving rapidly southeast and losing... And losing its identity by midday tomorrow. Area forecast for the next 24 hours. Viking, North Utsha, South Utsha, gale warning issued 0942. Southeasterly gale force 8, increasing severe gale force 9 later. Wind south 9, sea state rough or very rough, becoming very rough or high, rain later, visibility moderate or good. So good. See, I like this. We could do it. But what I need is, see, so for all these things, so I've got different areas. So the area forecast, you've got Viking, you've got the North Utshire, the South Utshire, you've got Forties, Cromarty, Forth, Tyne, Dogger, Fisher, and there we go on. So we need those sort of the equivalents for here. So, like, Dubai World.
Oh, wait, so Viking's not here?
No,
this
is like...
I got very excited.
I'm on it.
Sorry,
I'm on
the UK one.
I'm on it. I'm on the National Metrology website. They have an Aviation Met support system. They have a Marine Forecast Met support system. I'm getting in touch with the people. I've just sent a message to Paul Griffiths, no less,
awesome,
to say anyone at the airport that deals with wind gusts, marine, aviation or otherwise... We're taking it to the highest.
We are doing our bit.
Yep. Possible
helping
authorities.
The surfing community.
Public service.
Yep.
In other news.
Sponsored by Maersk Liners.
It's done. She's got a foghorn, ladies and gentlemen. It's on time. Son of up keys. Well done. That's brilliant. How did you get that? So quickly.
I should never ask.
Yep. Thanks, Isa.
Right.
Where do you want to begin? What do you want to talk about?
Give us the case numbers and then talk to us about Expo, because that is the big news.
Okay, so leading up to yesterday's figures, we had 632 new cases on Monday, 617 on Tuesday. Yesterday, they announced 608 new cases after more than 311,000 tests. They had more than 351,000 tests the day prior, 706 recoveries, 2 fatalities as well. So total deaths in the country, 2,068. Your active cases has dropped from 6,702 to 6,602. So definitely, good figures going in the right direction, so to speak.
Right. And that's important because we have Expo coming up, so it's good to see those numbers going down ahead of Expo. It will be making the Expo people very happy. But they have gone one step further instead in terms of safety with the big announcement last night.
That's right. So this applies to all visitors, be you a resident or a citizen living in the UAE or visiting from outside the country. So if you're aged 18 and over, you're vaccinated against COVID-19, you will need to present proof of that. Any vaccine recognised by your national government is acceptable. It can be digital or it can be hard copy certificate that you can present, as we found out from your interview earlier. If you don't have proof of vaccination, a negative PCR test needs to be taken, and results can't be more than 72 hours old on that one. If you are not vaccinated and you are a ticket holder, you will need a PCR test. If you haven't done one prior to arriving, there will be available a facility on site adjacent to Expo 2020 Dubai. We mentioned this earlier in the week. Dubai Health Authority, they've set up a COVID-19 PCR testing tent, as well as a 5-lane drive-through testing facility. So the drive-through will be able to handle up to 5,000 tests a day. And then you've got the actual facility itself able to accommodate up to 10,000 tests a day. But the turnaround with your results, you're looking at within 4 hours. So bear that in mind when you are going to visit Expo. Because obviously, as we heard from your interview, the suggestion is please do try and get that PCR test done before arrival, because then you can spend more time enjoying Expo 2020 Dubai. Expo officials also announced moving forward, a network of testing centres across the city will be available. You'll be able to find those on the Expo 2020 Dubai website, expo2020dubai.com. But these will be mentioned or available as they are announced. Another important point, PCR test will be free if you show any valid Expo 2020 Dubai ticket, the one-day or multi-day pass. And I believe from your interview, those will be available at the Expo facilities, the ones that are providing the testing. Other points to be aware of, all Expo and international participants, staff, volunteers, contractors, service providers, they actually need to be vaccinated to be on site. You've got the disinfection stations that are located across the entire venue. Mandatory face masks and indoor and need to be worn indoor as well as outdoor. And your 2 meter physical distancing will be maintained as well. But as we've heard from officials of late, obviously these guidelines are what is currently required presently, but they can be and possibly will be adjusted accordingly as, you know, as guidelines are adjusted here in the UAE when it comes to COVID-19. So as of this present moment in time, this is what you need to know or have ready if when come October 1st when it's open.
Thank you.
You're most welcome.
More information?
Check out the Air and News Centre app.
We just got a message. I'm going to read it very quickly to you. Hello, Brandy. Tom has just done a wonderful shipping forecast. I'm not sure that we can do much better, but we'd be very happy to help him try and fine-tune things if you feel he needs it. And that is signed Ed, who is Rear Commodore of the Dubai Offshore Sailing Club.
Thank you, Rear Commodore. Anything to do, I can help.
This is moving along very, very nicely. We'll have a shipping forecast by the end of next week.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Where I'm going to get straight into the next interview. No faffing around, because we are getting so many questions from you about this. Looking at the big story of the past 24 hours, Expo 2020 Dubai announcing that all visitors over 18 will have to either prove vaccination or negatively test, a PCR test, for COVID. We are speaking now to Expo 2020 Dubai Senior Vice President, Shona McGeeken. Shona, good morning and thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you, Brandy, for having me on the show.
Well, thank you for coming. And I am just going to fire questions at you like this is Mastermind, because we have so many of them coming in. Set the scene for us, though. Tell us why Expo's made this decision.
Well, as the largest global event to be held in the last 2 years, Expo 2020 Dubai, we're seeing a an increasing demand for international travel, and we feel that we have a responsibility to ensure that all visitors and staff can enjoy a safe and exceptional event. So as we get closer to opening our doors, we basically want to reassure visitors that the health, safety and well-being of everyone visiting and also working at Expo 2020 remains our number one priority.
We're going to get into the logistics because that is what people want to know. First off, is it an either or? Is a PCR test required for people who are vaccinated?
No, it is an either or. So either proof of a vaccination or proof of a PCR test conducted in the last 72 hours.
What's going to count as proof of vaccination, Shona?
So obviously, if you're a resident here in the UAE, and indeed, I think, as Serena said earlier, visitors are encouraged to use the Al Hosn app. So that's one form. But also for international tourists who maybe haven't gone onto the Al Hosn app, we will be permitting their vaccination cards that they have that show from their national government the recognised vaccines.
Do residents have to use their Al Hosn app, or can I use the certificate that the DHA has sent me?
You can use the certificate as well. We want to make this as easy as possible. Really, we're not there to put barriers in the way, but we do want to ensure that we are observing safety protocols. That's something we've been doing throughout, very much working with the medical authorities to ensure that that we have safety first and foremost.
Does it have to be digital, or are you accepting paper certificates as well?
Paper certificates will be fine as well.
How are you going to tell Shona that these certificates are genuine, given that presumably they're going to look different as they come from everywhere around the world?
Yes, well, obviously, as we have 192 country pavilions with us, we're working closely with our international participants, and we're aware of the different types of vaccination cards from those countries and the internationally recognised vaccines from the different governments. So we're working in close cooperation with them. This news has been warmly received by them, I must say.
And we're getting a lot of questions in, actually, on the types of vaccines. Will all vaccines be accepted, or do you have a list?
It's the vaccines that are recognised from that individual country. So whatever the national government from a particular country recognises, we will accept that.
And are you training up your people to be able to know all of this? It sounds like quite a lot of information to get your head around.
We are doing a lot of training. We're doing a lot of training on site anyway. Yes, we have been looking at that and ensuring that we make it as smooth and seamless as possible for people entering.
Okay, we've got one question coming in from Saleh. What about those who have a medical exemption for vaccination?
Yes, so again, if people can prove a medical exemption, we would encourage people to still have the PCR test as well, but they can have their medical exemption certificate as well.
Okay, let's talk about that PCR testing. We know that you've got a massive new PCR testing facility that you've just built up near Expo. A lot of people asking how rapid that's going to be. If you need to get tested on site to get in, how long is it going to take for those results?
Okay, so we would encourage people first and foremost to be vaccinated. I think as everywhere around the world, you know, vaccination is really key. But if people haven't already got a PCR test, and bear in mind, obviously, international visitors, as you were saying earlier, as they arrive in Dubai or across the UAE, have to be tested, and therefore they will hopefully have on first entry, at least their first visit to Expo, have that test. If they want to come to the testing facility just adjacent to the Expo site, it's a four-hour turnaround. So we do encourage people to do this in advance so that they can make the most of their time at Expo, not just to turn up and then to waste 4 hours of their day going and getting their PCR test. We want people to enjoy as much as possible of their time at Expo.
Well, something that I know that Tom's very curious about, those free tests for people who've got Expo tickets, will that be at every testing centre across Dubai or just some?
So at the moment, we've obviously announced that it's at the testing site adjacent to Expo, and we will be revealing very shortly on our website, expo2020.com, the other testing sites where if you show proof of an Expo ticket, that you will be able to have a free test.
My favourite question of the morning, if I have a season ticket, how many times can I get a a free PCR test? What if I just use it every time I need a PCR test without actually going to Expo?
Well, again, we would hope that people would actually want to be vaccinated and not just to rely on the PCR testing. So I think, if you know, our message is very much the vaccines first and foremost, and then the PCR test for those people really travelling who maybe are coming from countries where vaccines haven't been readily available. That's why we're putting this on, to ensure that we offer the same opportunities for everybody and to ensure the safety of everybody there. As you know, Brandy, all our staff and volunteers and retailers on site have to be vaccinated in order to work on site, and that's something that's mandatory. And also all our front-facing staff on site are being tested very regularly as well, in addition to that.
Okay, quickly, what does it mean for school groups? Will kids need to test?
Ah, yes, I heard that earlier discussion about the school groups. So obviously in the UAE, many of the school groups are being encouraged to have vaccinations. So again, a lot of people are being vaccinated. At the moment, this is only for visitors over 18.
Right. Questions from people who I suspect might actually be involved in Expo. What could it mean for the numbers that you attract to Expo?
Well, we're still focused on our 25 million visits. We do accept that safety measures may affect our visitation, but really for us, the safety and well-being of everyone both visiting and working Expo remains our number one priority.
Quickly, again, 20 seconds, the over 80s, will they need to be vaccinated? Will they need to test? And do they get a free ticket?
So, our senior citizens do have free access, as well as our under 18s also have free access. And again, the same measures apply in terms of the vaccination or proof of a negative PCR test.
Shona McGeachan, Expo 2020 Dubai Senior Vice President. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the back of that announcement from Expo 2020 Dubai that all visitors over 18 will need to be vaccinated or have a negative PCR test, 72 hours validity, to attend Expo. We appreciate you taking everybody's questions. The majority of those came from listeners and viewers this morning, and answering them so quickly as well.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast.
Love an index, love a survey, love a ranking, and they've all come together with the most recent Henley & Partners Best Residents by Investment Cities for Business Index. Results were released last couple of days. Good news for Dubai as well. Top regional city here for investment migration programs. Top the list on a number of the different requirements and categories. And was ranked 11th globally. To reflect on that and to talk to us about how they come to the final list of rankings, we're joined by the director of Henley and Partners Dubai, the authors of the annual index, Philippe Amarante, who joins us live on the line. Philippe, good morning to you.
A very good morning and happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday to you. Happy to say that Philippe also joining us live on Microsoft Teams as well. Listen, Philippe, before we get on to Dubai and how it's taken its spot, maybe you can just help us out here in terms of our viewers and listeners and tell us, how do you and your team arrive or rather decide on those rankings? What sort of categories are cities judged on for this particular index?
So what we have done is, based on the fact that we see quite a rise at the moment in talent and business relocation around the globe, you know, whether it's a result of the pandemic or remote working, whether it's tensions and trade wars, whether it's G20's proposal for a global minimum corporate income tax, we wanted to understand a little bit more how the very, you know, popular known destinations for relocation, countries and their capitals, actually differ. And what do they have to bring to the table? So together with our partner, Deep Knowledge Analytics, we have, I think, analyzed more than 1,000 data points, 40 parameters across maybe the key 10 drivers that are relevant for relocation, whether it's for business, again, for talent or for your family. And those are, you know, COVID safety, of course, very contemporary lifestyle aspects, healthcare, real estate, security, infrastructure. And, I can go on. I don't want to spoiler. So please use the tool and find out and play a little bit with yourself.
In terms of Dubai's ranking them within said categories as well, ranking number 11 globally, but obviously a very high here regionally. What does that tell us about the demand for a relocation or life or a residency here in Dubai?
Yeah, so I think you have to look into context, right? So if you use the index and look into assets or aspects that matter to you, particularly for, you know, let's say business expansion, you will see that actually Dubai is top of the list, right? If you take tax, for instance, if you take infrastructure, and, you know, to drive a little bit deeper there in those subcategories that we have identified, you know, it's about e-government, it's about internet connectivity, telecommunication infrastructure, accessibility, etc. So this provides a great environment for business builders, for entrepreneurs to come to Dubai, because they find the right environment to basically build the business and continue its growth. So the list and the index is not so much only looking at who's best. Each of those cities, they cater for different needs. And the index and the tool basically is an opportunity to maybe make more strategic decisions based on data available that we have.
You talked there about the sort of categories, and it's interesting. I'm sure you, like me, and many others, are not surprised by the fact that Dubai scored highest overall in the tax category, given the very beneficial tax system we have here, as in zero. It also ranked highly in the COVID safety. I get that one as well, just behind Singapore. The one that I impressed with, ninth overall globally for infrastructure, for a city that is relatively young compared to those in the 10 spots below it and above it as well. That's an amazing achievement, isn't it, for Dubai?
You know, it's an incredible achievement. And it reflects, I think, on the fact that even pre-pandemic, you know, Dubai, the UAE as a whole, has been highly attractive for businesses to relocate and expand, because there's such an agility happening here in this country, in the city, which gives businesses just an opportunity to leverage upcoming trends very efficiently. And infrastructure is just one of them. I mean, we talk about aviation and we talk about many other things. And we see that coming now, you know, from investors all over the world to really appreciate the environment that Dubai and the UAE has to give.
In terms of a couple of the key findings that I found from reading through this one, and one phrase that has come up time and time again, and one phrase that we talk a lot about here, is high net worth individuals. We're using that phrase a lot more here at the moment. Is there a change? Are we seeing evidence? Are you seeing evidence at Henley & Partners of more HNWIs coming to the UAE?
Yes, and that's a global trend, right? So we see much more mobility happening, much more need for mobility happening amongst those cohorts. And again, it might be a result, and this is a result of the pandemic, obviously, having optionality. It's a keyword that we hear a lot in discussions with those high net worth individuals, being, you know, still globally mobile when even maybe restrictions are imposed. So, and Dubai is benefiting of that very largely. Dubai, its brand, its management with the pandemic has really gained a global attraction and made it just a very great destination to have an asset in, and whether it's real estate, whether it's, you know, your production, your company. I think that Dubai is benefiting from that global mobility trend very, very strongly.
The other phrase that really caught my imagination is investment migration and investment migration programs. Obviously, residence by investment programs. Again, it's something that's not new, but certainly a lot more effort onto that here in the UAE recently. Again, are you seeing more evidence, demand, more competition, I suppose, for these sort of programs?
Yes, we do see that on global level, right? I mean, there is a strong need for countries to attract capital and to attract talent, you know, and the pandemic has just accelerated that, right? You talk about jurisdictions and countries which are heavily impacted by, you know, economic, you know, down spirals, and then I'll just have to recover. Not every economy was resilient enough, for instance, such as the one of Dubai and the UAE. So we see a rise of opportunities coming up. We will see maybe more countries coming to the table, providing opportunities for those investors, for those businesses, for those talents to basically relocate and bring in their ideas, bring in their IP, bring in their capital.
Is there more demand, not just here in the UAE, not just here in Dubai, but globally at the moment, Philippe, for second passports, for those that look to continue their businesses?
100%. And I think we talked about this a while ago. Mm. We see huge, huge influx coming from even very much the old markets, whether it's North America or Europe. Again, there is this need across those communities to have optionality, to have, you know, a hedge against volatility, whether it's a pandemic, whether it's geopolitical stress or whatnot. Climate change may be the next big challenge. You know, for all of us. So they want to make sure that they maintain the options, that they maintain some level of connectivity to markets, whether it's for economic purposes, for education, for their business. So it is something that is rising, and it becomes not only for the high net worth individuals, I think, an important consideration, also for, as we call them, maybe the affluent clients.
And has the pandemic impacted that? I mean, we're seeing so much evidence of people looking for space, looking for the ability to conduct their business as well. Has the pandemic made people think about their futures?
It certainly accelerated the process. That's something that we witness across all our offices on global level. The need to remain mobile, right, I think has just come to light by the effect that you were not mobile before, right? And that is just the reality that the pandemic has brought to the table. I think last time we talked about this sort of bizarre situation whereby the Prime Minister of Australia has made it illegal for Australians to return home, you know, when we had this issue with the Delta variant, I think, rising in India. So basically, what do you do if you are, you know, a single passport holder or single residence holder? You don't have anywhere to go. And I think that is a concern that is now, you know, really realized by those communities, and they understand that there are solutions available for them to sort of prepare for the next issue that might come.
Philippe, it's always good catching up with you. Really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much indeed for your time this morning. Thanks also for the index as well. It makes for some fascinating reading. Highly encourage people to download it now. Just search for Henley & Partners Best Residence by Investment Cities for Business Index to get all the latest data, all the latest findings on there. Just to give you the top 10. Top 10 for you in this list. London at number one, then New York, Sydney, Singapore, Zurich, Los Angeles, Barcelona, Hong Kong, Vienna, Toronto, and then Dubai at number 11.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Right, let's put all those words in a bit of context, shall we? Khatija Haque is Chief Economist at Emirates NBD. We have the latest non-oil trade data numbers out from the UAE. Basically, the economy, if you strip the oil out. Khatija, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Brandy.
When we talk, though, about non-oil trade with the UAE, what kind of stuff are we actually speaking about?
Okay, so for the UAE, the main business is actually imports and then re-exports. And for that, it's things like machinery and equipment, you know, precious metals, stones, jewelry, gold, all of those sorts of things tend to dominate both imports and exports and re-exports. But what's been interesting is we have also seen some growth in terms of exports of food and beverages from the UAE to other parts of the world. So I think that's a sector which potentially will see more growth going forward as well. But generally, it's around importing stuff that is consumed in the region. So obviously, big machines, construction stuff, consumer machinery and equipment as well, computers, phones, etc., cars. And then the big stuff, which we do very well, is gold and jewellery.
What has the pandemic meant for those imports and exports? Tom, our shipping correspondent, did a cracking interview yesterday with the shipping expert Rustin Edwards, and they were talking about issues in the supply chain. The fact that you're, you know, pretty much having to pay someone a little bit more to stick a container on a ship at the moment. What's been the knock-on effects of that for us?
The data that we had released yesterday is actually for 2020. So to some extent, it predates a lot of the shipping issues that we've been facing this year. So if we look at what happened last year, what was interesting was actually the UAE's direct exports to the rest of the world actually grew in terms of the value of those exports. But I think a lot of that was because the price of gold was fairly high, and that is a big chunk of the UAE's exports to the rest of the world. So that helped to increase the numbers. But when you look at the value of re-exports and imports, both of those actually fell. And that is consistent with the general slowdown in global trade that we saw last year because of the pandemic. So borders closed, people initially stopped spending on imported goods, certainly. Obviously, factories closed down, so people couldn't actually make anything to send abroad. But this year, all of the reopening is basically what's led to those frictions and those shortages, because, you know, consumers who were stuck at home and found that they were actually saving money because they were getting these unemployment benefits in the US and Europe ended up buying a bunch of stuff online. Factories were closed, but as they reopened, they found demand obviously outstripping what they could produce. And then there were bottlenecks on the shipping side. Now, the data for this year has shown that there was an exceptionally strong rebound in the volume of global trade. So obviously the UAE will have benefited from that, although most of that volume of trade growth was between China and the US, not so much in the region. So I think if we talk to ports operators here, they're sort of indicating 5% intra-regional growth in terms of the volume of trade. So I think the numbers this year will be better because demand is picking up in the region. We are seeing more flows. You know, people are buying more stuff. Businesses are looking at investing in equipment. So I do think we will see a growth both in exports and imports in 2021.
But that's all stuff that we don't make. I mean, one of the things that we have seen this year back in March was the launch of Operation 300 Billion, which was a manufacturing strategy for the UAE to get us making stuff. How much of a difference could that make to our balance of trade?
So if you're looking at the composition of the UAE's trade, direct exports, which is stuff that we make or add significant value to, is actually the smallest part of the total trade. So imports is the biggest, and then re-exports is next, and then direct exports, which is, again, what we make, is the smallest part. So I think the growth is probably, I think what the government wants to do is drive that sector to be a bigger proportion of overall trade. So that does mean investing in manufacturing. And I think last year, you know, the fact that the UAE could turn quite quickly to manufacturing PPE when the world needed it and export that then to other parts of the world was indicative of, you know, flexibility to change things around quite quickly. So I think that's opened eyes to the possibility of growing the manufacturing sector here with a view to then exporting what is made here to other places and perhaps reducing the reliance of regional partners in terms of, you know, exporting to other countries in the GCC and looking further afield, what can we export to other markets outside the GCC? So I think that's a really interesting strategy and we'll have to see how that evolves over the next few years. It is going to take time to scale these sorts of things up. It takes time to build factories and get them running. But I do think that is an area potentially where we do see much faster growth going forward.
One of the things that we saw out of the latest official Saudi numbers was a bit of a change in the balance between the non-oil economy and the oil economy. The oil economy becoming a bigger part of the balance sheet, if you like, percentage-wise. That's partly down to the oil price and Saudi putting more of its own oil back on the market. But what are we seeing here, do you think? What does it feel like to you?
Look, we don't have a quarterly breakdown for UAE GDP since the first half of 2020. So it's hard to see what's gone on over the last year. But generally, the UAE is actually, in terms of GDP, the most diversified economy in the region. So oil GDP is only around 30% of the whole UAE's GDP. For Abu Dhabi, it's higher. It's around half of Abu Dhabi's economy. But I do think that, you know, notwithstanding the movements in the price of oil, I suspect next year we will see an increase in oil share of GDP simply because production is going to rise. You know, so we've had OPEC committing to 400,000 barrels per day every month, and the UAE is going to be a big chunk of that. So we do expect oil sector growth to be quite robust next year. But looking forward, you know, the focus is very much on growing the non-oil sectors, on diversification, on moving away from relying on oil revenues too much. So I think over the longer term, we will see that number perhaps ease slightly, the share of oil to the rest of GDP. But it's always going to be a big chunk of what drives this region. So, yes, you can diversify away, but I don't think you can ever really get away from the fact that this is an oil-producing economy at heart.
Okay, 1 minute left with you. So very quickly, Khatija, we've got the UK inflation numbers this morning up to 3.2%. Where's your sense of where we might be sitting here in the UAE?
So the official inflation numbers in the UAE are actually still slightly negative. And the reason for that is it takes time for the official price index survey to catch up with what's happening in the market. So when you look at housing costs, for example, in the UAE inflation basket, those are still falling on an annual basis. But if you ask anyone who's renting a house today or an apartment today, they'll tell you that the rents have gone up. The reason it takes a long time for that to feed through is because not everybody is renewing their leases at the same time, right? So in terms of who is being asked about their housing costs in the survey, only a small proportion have actually experienced that increase because they've renewed their leases. So over time, we will start to see inflation in the UAE pick up. We're expecting it to get back into positive territory by the end of this year. Okay. And then some moderate average growth in prices next year, maybe around 1.5 to 2% inflation. So still nowhere near what we're seeing in some of the bigger economies like the US.
Khatija Haque, Emirates NBD.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.